Thank you, Michael. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Yeah, perfectly.
Okay, cool. You have me a lovely young man, Michael. It's a privilege to be asked to share at Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and
Hello, Michael.
so really disappointed not to be able
Hello.
to make it last week. So I'm grateful to be clean. If there is anybody that's new to Narcotics Anonymous here in the meeting, well, warm welcome to you. Recovery is possible in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Michael, how long have I got to speak for?
An hour, but anyway, no, you 20, anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes, that's fine.
Okay, well, I'll give you this sort of abridged version. Just going to center myself. I had a really busy day. I got clean when I was got clean when I was in my early 20s. I was 23 when I arrived in Narcotics Anonymous, and I share that because I think it's important for people to know that you can get clean and stay clean when you're young. When I got clean in Narcotics Anonymous, there were no other people around that were my age in their early 20s. Most people in the rooms were, and most of the guys were in their kind of early 40s or kind of late 30s, early 40s. And I think I looked for a reason to disqualify myself and to be different from everyone else. And I looked around and couldn't see anybody that I could relate to, and I spoke to somebody whose opinion I valued in the rooms, who suggested that I should stay, and that the next person that walks into Narcotics Anonymous may be a young person. So I did stay. So I got clean when I was quite young. I come from a kind of a working class family in the West Country in the UK. A really small kind of the language I've learned in recovery is it's a deprived area. I didn't know that at the time. That was news to me. My parents didn't have much. I didn't have much, and I grew up in. On a council estate in a countryside village in the West Country. My father is French, he's not just a little bit French, he's like beret wearing, onion toting, stripy blue and white shirt Frenchman type of Frenchman. And as a child, I just wanted to be like everybody else. I kind of didn't. My father was this really flamboyant Frenchman that wore a beret, and I just felt intensely ashamed of him, and picked up that fantasy of wanting to be different, wanting to be like everybody else, and imagining that my real parents spoke with a Bristolian accent and would be picking me up anytime soon. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case for me, and I kind of, and I, so I kind of, I kind of felt different, kind of felt ashamed of who I was and what I was at a really young age, as a result of that, experienced a lot of judgment and a lot of ridicule, and I've kind of carried that anxiety about being judged into Narcotics Anonymous. It's like, when I share my experience, strength, and hope, I open myself up to judgment, to ridicule. But what I've learned to do in Narcotics Anonymous is to, in spite of myself, engage with this program. The anxiety has not left me, but I've kind of learned to recover, in spite of it. So I kind of grew up in a family where alcohol and drug use was really normal. You know, my father drank, as you might imagine, for a Frenchman, he drank a lot of Calvados, a lot of brandy. Drugs were kind of normal thing, drugs like cannabis, drugs like ecstasy and amphetamine and LSD, they were kind of normal, and if you were celebrating, you drank and used. If you were commiserating, you drank and used, so it was really normal for me growing up with that. And my parents were old hippies. They dragged me to festivals that didn't have names, with middle-aged people dancing around naked, very kind of odd hippie type festivals, which I just found very, very strange, and again, I just felt really different and I'm really kind of ashamed, and kind of wanting to be like everybody else. It's interesting because in recovery as a man, I now really cherish, the diversity in my family. I speak two languages, and I have two cultures as part of my life, and I kind of, that's something I really value, but that took me time to get to. So like a lot of people, the first drugs I picked up were kind of like cigarettes and alcohol and cannabis, and I mean, drugs you don't hear so much about now, Tippex and lighter gas and petrol and all that kind of stuff. And it was, I used to escape. I used to escape, that was the reason I used. I didn't like myself. I didn't like my reality. I wanted to be somebody different. And I used drugs to escape from who I was and where I was. And they did that. And I struggled through school, because using became more important for me. And in my kind of really, in my late teens, kind of early 20s, I discovered kind of heroin and benzodiazepine. And I know it's, drugs a drug is a drug is a drug, but I share my experience with you, and kind of use most drugs, and use most drugs addictively. But the drugs that finally brought me to my knees were heroin and benzodiazepines. And I was it kind of it took me to a place where, my friends had turned their backs on me, my family had disowned me, as a result of my using my own mother, as a result of my behavior, the impact on my mother's emotional and mental health was she needed to seek professional psychiatric inpatient support, and she accessed a family's program. And I came back from this family's program and promptly asked me to leave the family home, and I found myself, sleeping rough and living in hostels in Bristol. And really quickly I lost everything, and there was there was a drug worker, I still remember him, Dave Mack, and he used to visit me once a month, and he offered me some help. And so I went back to the West Country and went into rehab. And for me, there's lots of different ways to get clean and stay clean. Lots of people do it through the rooms. I needed to be removed from society, and kind of that's what worked for me. I went into rehab. I spent a few months in rehab. It was my introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. The people that came into the treatment facility I was in, to chair a meeting, they're still part of my support network, and they mean an awful lot to me. So I kind of went into rehab, and then I kind of hit Narcotics Anonymous, and I I found being around people really difficult. I don't know if anyone can relate to, I was not a social user. You know, I liked to use on my own. I didn't like to share my stuff with anyone. You know, and I found myself in Narcotics Anonymous surrounded by people. And yeah, like I said, I came in really young, really full of shame, full of guilt, just really shut down. I couldn't tell you how I was really feeling one day to the next, you know, and but I kept coming to NA and I kept turning up, you know, and I listened. You know, and I would sit in meetings, I'd sit on my hands looking at the floor, terrified to get up and go to the toilet because everyone will look at me when I stand up. You know, I couldn't put two words together really, but I listened and I heard people talk about rebuilding their lives. Like I heard people talking about, you know, getting jobs, passing their driving tests, going to college, getting girlfriends, which is, I hadn't had a girlfriend for a very long time at that point. You know, and I slowly started, it's that step two stuff in it. I slowly started to believe like that if it worked for you, it could work for me, you know, and so I kind of, you know, I engaged with the process. I got a sponsor and got a tea commitment and, you know, slowly started to work through the steps and, you know, I did all the stuff that I heard people talking about. I went to college, I got a girlfriend. You know, I really believe she saved my life, you know, because when I got clean, I don't know about anyone else, but a lot of my issues were image based. I really felt like, you know, I despised myself. You know, when I looked in the mirror, I did not like what I saw. You know, I don't think I would have stayed clean. You know, and it's not that I'm recommending that people rush out and get into a relationship, but this woman saw something in me, you know, and you know, we started a relationship and we were together for 4 and a half years. And you know, I do believe she saved my life, and I also believe that if we'd have stayed together, we would have killed each other. You know, and that relationship ending was one of the first big challenges that I had to deal with in my recovery, you know, and 'cause you hear people in meetings talk about, you know, losing a job or getting divorced or serious illness, you know, and not using drugs. And I can remember thinking like, you know, I don't know, but I've been through those things. You know, it's like, I've been through fertility treatment with my ex-partner. We, you know, during the pandemic, we went through fertility treatment twice. We got pregnant and miscarried. The second time it didn't work. And, you know, last April, we separated. Ultimately, you know, our marriage couldn't withstand, you know, couldn't withstand the loss and the difficulties from the fertility treatment. You know, our relationship didn't make it. Both of us took our eyes off the ball, you know, and that was really difficult, really difficult. And I kind of thought like I wasn't going to stay clean, you know. Well, it wasn't, no, that's not true, actually. It wasn't that I wasn't going to stay clean. I didn't know how I would survive the feelings, is what it is. It was so painful. Like, obviously, I'm really aware using not going to make any difference, you know. But kind of like not being alive, maybe that would make a difference. Not that I seriously contemplated taking my own life, just that it was so painful and I wanted the pain to stop. That doesn't mean that us separating is and wasn't the right thing for me, you know, and the right thing for her. Like, I've learned that in recovery, that just because something is painful, it doesn't mean it's not right. You know, and actually, you know, I deserved more than what I was getting out of my marriage at the end of it. And clearly, she deserved someone that she could be happy with, and it wasn't me, you know. And despite kind of managing the loneliness and kind of loss, and grieving the end of the marriage. I am happier. You know, Michael talked about the morning meeting that I do. I don't know how much time I've got, Michael, but I'm guessing I've got 5 minutes maybe. So my home group is the 7 a.m. Just for a Day meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. It's a daily meeting, and I've been attending it every day almost for the last year. And you know, I mean obviously I owe Narcotics Anonymous my life anyway. Like, you know, it's like, I remember when I got clean, and I was obviously, I was young, I just thought, fucking hell, my life is over. What have I got to look forward to? Spending it sat in freezing cold church halls listening to people talk about God and heroin. Like, what am I going to do the rest of my life? You know, no alcohol, no drugs. I mean, what I wouldn't have believed you if you'd have told me, like, the things that I would achieve in my life. I never would have believed it. You know, like, going to university, having a career, getting married, traveling the world. I've done all of those things in recovery. You know, and I never would have believed it. I didn't even believe that I could get a day clean, let alone, you know, experience all these amazing things in life. And, you know, as a direct result of, you know, attending Narcotics Anonymous and going to meetings and, you know, having the privilege to sponsor other men and be a sponsee and kind of be of service. So, yeah, I've been attending an online meeting every day, and you know, we open the meeting at 7 a.m. It's an hour and a half. We have a share every day, most days, and you know, it's a privilege to be of service on that meeting. I've learnt so much, and yeah, I've never attended a meeting. There's something. I've gotten to know the people in that meeting. Very, like, they're the first people I see when I wake up, and they have been every day for the last year. And that's it's quite something. Like, you know, my old, every other home group I've ever done, I see people once a week, you know, but to see people every day, it's, you get to know about people, you get to know people really well. And it feels like an extended family. And I think I would have found it, you know, people have been so kind and supportive of me, and held me and allowed me to experience my feelings, and been there to listen. And I think it would have been that much more difficult for me over the last year without Narcotics Anonymous and without my home group. How long have I got left, Michael?
Long as you need.
Okay, well, I'll wrap it up on this, really. One of the things that I got into as a way to manage my kind of emotions and stuff when I came out of my marriage was running. And I ran for 3 months, and I kind of injured myself. And I've been recovering from that since August. I haven't been running. I had an x-ray today. And the first thing, yeah, and because it's still painful, I had an x-ray on my knee. And they rang me up just 10 minutes before the meeting and said, you have, you know, there's degeneration in your cartilage. You have osteoarthritis in your knee. And let's discuss pain management. And I said, well, okay, what are we talking about here? She said, do you want pain management? I said, yeah. She said, oh, well, if I have to consider pain management, it will be something I discuss with my sponsor. I didn't tell her I was going to discuss it with my sponsor, none of her business, but you know, I'm not. If I was going to take pain medication, it would be something that I would not rush into. And, you know, I am going to talk it through with my sponsor and look at what alternatives there are that might be better for me. But I guess I am sitting with some, because I love running and I'm in a lot of pain often with my knee. And I suppose there's a bit of, you know, me not accepting that diagnosis. There's a bit of me feeling angry. There's a bit of me feeling sad. A whole lot of stuff, really. And like, I think it is important for me to share that because, like, I believe, my belief is that self-pity is unexpressed sadness, and that's not somewhere I want to go with this. You know, there are so many other things that I can do to exercise and to stay fit and to stay healthy, and you know, that's where I want to be focusing my attention on. But it's important for me to talk about it. But sorry if I've gone on. I don't know how long I've been talking. I hope you got something from that. If you didn't, then there are tons more meetings with lots of other speakers. But yeah, thanks for letting me share. Thank you.